Good morning, everyone. My name is Roz, and I'll be reading from the Bible for us this morning. We're in the book of Hebrews, and I'll start in chapter 4, verse 14, and read up to verse 2 in chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Every high priest is selected from among the people and is appointed to represent the people in matters related to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and are going astray, since he himself is subject to weakness.
Thanks, Ross. Hey, my name's Tom. If I haven't met you before, I would love to do that after we're done in here. You found yourself in the second week of our Finding Joy in Jesus series. So last week we talked about the presence of God. Today we'll talk about compassion of God. Next week, talking about hearing Jesus, the voice of Jesus. And then particularly on the 19th, I just want to call out that week, enjoying the anger of Jesus. I'm intrigued to see what happens. You're definitely going to want to be here for that one. But today we're talking about enjoying the compassion of Jesus. And if it's okay, I'd love to just open our Bibles up straight away. I'd love to get stuck straight into it. Exodus chapter 34, verse 6. That's my kid up the back making all that noise. Ava, I love you. Thank you, Bree. Exodus chapter 34, verse 6. We're going to talk about compassion of God. This is one of the very first parts of the entire Bible where God talks about himself. This is not people talking about God. This is God himself saying, this is what I'm like. And what I find fascinating is that he leads with compassion. Exodus 34, verse 6, the Lord, compassionate and gracious God. And so it doesn't surprise us when we come to the New Testament, Matthew chapter 14, verse 14, that Jesus, who's the image of God, he lives in exactly the same way, he embodies that compassion as well. So look at Matthew 14, 14, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. Now, is it okay if straight out of the gates we do some very nerdy Bible work together? We're going to go for it. This might fall flat. See how you go. In Exodus 34, verse 6, God chooses the word compassion. The Old Testament is predominantly written in Hebrew. He's chosen a word, something like rahim. And what's fascinating is that is connected to the Hebrew word for womb, rechem. So there's something in the word choice that God has made there to describe what he is like, that his attitude towards people moves him in the most inner way. And get this, when you come to the Greek language, which is what the New Testament is primarily written in, you don't get the concept of womb, but you do get a Greek word that is incredibly difficult to pronounce in English. It's something like this, esplagniste. I'm sure I botched that, and if you're a Bible college lecturer, please ignore me. And what is interesting about that word is that it refers to the guts and the innards of a person. How about that? That in the Hebrew language, you've gone for womb. In the Greek language, you've gone for innards, you've gone for guts. The idea is this, that at the very essence of God, no matter what language you're talking about, compassion is core to who he is. It's what he names about himself as his very leading characteristic. We see that played out in the life of Jesus. So I've got three things I'd love to say today about enjoying the compassion of Jesus. And the first one really needs to be said often and frequently and clearly, which is that Jesus has compassion for our suffering. Many of us through 2024 had really difficult years. Many of us went to funerals we weren't planning to attend. You pulled up at the hospital way more times than you were hoping to, either for yourself or for someone else. And you're pretty happy to leave 2024 in the past because it was a year marked by suffering. And we don't know it yet, but in 2025, there will be many of us who right today are sitting quite comfortably who are going to go through a lot of suffering. It's a part of the human condition. The Bible leads us to expect that this life is broken, that when we experience suffering, that is exactly the way that the scriptures lead us to think about it. There is a day coming when there will be no more suffering, no more mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things will pass away and the new order of things has come, but that day is not yet. And what we're doing is patiently waiting. Come with me to John chapter 11, where Jesus goes to his friend's funeral. His name was Lazarus. Jesus is familiar with some of the other people at the funeral as well. John 11, 33, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who'd come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. You see the compassion coming through from Jesus, that even though he is fully divine and ultimately has power over this situation, which he's going to show in just a second, yet still he sees their weeping, and what does it do to him? It deeply moves him. It even troubles him. Verse 34, where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied, and Jesus wept. John chapter 11, 35, Jesus wept. This whole little section starts with other people weeping, and the result is that Jesus weeps. Can I put that into really oversimplified language for us? When I weep, Jesus weeps. Jesus weeps at your weeping. Do you remember the last time that you cried? I don't think it's an overstatement to say that Jesus probably cried at you crying. He is deeply moved and even troubled by our suffering. When I take my daughter to the park and she falls over and she bruises her knee, what I want to do is make the pain and the bruise go away, but what I can do is that I can explain to her that I've seen what happened. I can name what has happened to her knee, and it does seem to make a pretty big difference because there is something inside of me, I take it something inside of you, that wants our pain to be seen, recognized, and validated by someone. And the good news today is that Jesus has compassion on our suffering. He actually knows what it's like to suffer from the inside. That's the whole Christmas message again. Now, that's good to hear, and not many of us are surprised that Jesus has compassion on our suffering. This second thing that I'd love to show you, though, from Hebrews chapter 4, is actually a little bit contrary to the way our minds often work. Here's what I want to say, is that Jesus has compassion not only when we suffer, but even when we are being tempted or have just fallen into sin. All of this comes to the very heart of the big picture question that lots of us have to wrestle with, which is, how does Jesus view me? And all of us bring our own baggage to this. We all bring our kind of uploaded backstories to a discussion of how does Jesus view me? If you just think about your family of origin, your family relationships for a second, right? If you always felt like your parents were warm, inviting, open arms, that's going to affect the way you think about God and Jesus. If, on the contrary, you always felt like your parents were kind of cold or distant, or even that they were always just on the edge of being upset at you, then I need you to let Hebrews chapter 4 inform the way you see things, because it's going to show you something beautiful that is not already in many of our minds. Hebrews chapter 4, start at verse 14 with us. How does Jesus view me when I'm being tempted or when I've just fallen into sin? He actually views you not with, I'm right on the edge and I'm going to explode any moment, but he views you with compassion. Look at this. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. Verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses. Why does it need to say it in the double negative? I take it because that's our default way of thinking for so many of us. We think Jesus is unable to empathize with our weaknesses because he just doesn't get it. He's up there, I'm down here. He doesn't know what it's like to be me. And so the author of Hebrews comes in and says, no, that is not true. We do not have a high priest, that's Jesus, who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses. What do we have? We have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. And in this moment, what you need to see is Jesus' full godness, his full divinity, side by side with his full humanity, right? His godness comes through in that last little phrase, he did not sin. He's the only one who has never fallen short. Christianity is a message for people who know that they've fallen short, not a message for people who know that 2025 is going to be your best year. It's a message for people who say, I'm really not sure how 2025 is going to go at all, and I'm not sure whether I'm going to bring my best self to that or not, but I do know that there is one, once, who never sinned. He's a blank canvas. He can take our sins. Unlike the high priest of the Old Testament, he is not dealing with his own sin first. He is there ready to take our sins because he himself did not sin. That's his full godness. And in the same moment, what is highlighted in this verse is that he is able to empathize with our weaknesses because he was fully human. This has always been the orthodox doctrine of the church, that God is not only, that Jesus is not only 50% God and 50% man, but he's actually 100% of both, if you can wrap your head around that. And in this verse, you see his humanity coming through. We have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are. And so verse 16 gives the application of his ability to empathize with our weaknesses. It says, therefore, you know, let us then approach God's throne. Most of us, when we see temptation coming or we feel like we've just fallen into sin, we do the opposite of approach God, don't we? We turn from him. We think, I want not much to do with him because he's probably very displeased with me right now. And we've lost sight of Jesus' compassion, even for us in our low moments. Let us then approach God's throne. What kind of a throne is it? It's not a throne of judgment. It's a throne of grace. How are we able to approach it? Not kind of tentatively and worried, but we're able to approach with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. And time of need there specifically in Hebrews seems to be referring to temptation, a moment in which we've just fallen into sin, for example. And so I've said two things so far today, talking about the compassion of Jesus. We said that Jesus has compassion for us when we're suffering, and he even has compassion for us when we wouldn't expect it, like in a moment when we're being tempted or we've just fallen into sin. Now, this series is called Enjoying Jesus or Finding Joy in Jesus. Has anyone been watching the cricket recently? A couple of hands up. The people who celebrate the most when a wicket falls in the cricket, right? The crowd are kind of a bit excited. Some of them might stand up and cheer. But the people who are really getting the joy factor out of that wicket that's just fallen are the people on the field playing the game. And so I want to suggest something today, that if you're looking to enjoy your faith, if you're looking specifically today to enjoy the compassion of Jesus, one of the best ways to do that is to play the game too, by which I mean to distribute the compassion of Jesus as somebody who has had compassion shown to them. So my question to you really is just, will you join with Jesus by showing compassion? Come with me to Luke chapter 11, verse 30. This is another prominent place. This is another prominent place where compassion pops up in the life and teaching of Jesus. And it says this: a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, where he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, went away, leaving him half dead. 31. A priest happened to be going down the same road.
And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. Verse 33, but a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. Other translations say compassion. It's that guts word again. What you see here is Jesus encouraging his followers to love their neighbor, and particularly what that looks like is to have compassion on our neighbor. In case any of us were in doubt about whether this is for us as well, verse 37 finishes the little section and he says, go and do likewise. What I want to talk about just briefly, this is a very simple point, by the way, but it's worth making at this time of year as you think about what's coming this year, what's on your priority list for this year, and even how are you going to distribute your finances this year. Jesus is talking about loving your neighbor. And he's talking about part of that is that when you come across somebody who you might not have previously considered to be your neighbor, that's the Samaritan Jew thing in the story, that even for that person, he's saying, have compassion on them. Have pity on them. Now, for some of us, an obvious application might be to think about your immediate version of life and the people in that sphere. You could call them your neighbors. Is there anybody in your neighborhood, whether that's a physical neighborhood or even your work neighborhood, whatever it is, who you might be being called to show compassion to in this moment? At the same time, not many of us are going to walk along a road this afternoon and see somebody stripped and beaten and had all their stuff taken from them. And yet, I take it that if the point of what Jesus is teaching here is to expand who's considered to be your neighbor, then globally, you've got to recognize that the world today is more connected or at least visible to the other parts of the world than it has been before. And there really are people right now having an incredibly tough time in terms of their physical provisions. And so this might just be a really helpful time to wave the flag for the idea of loving your global neighbor. And maybe even thinking, hey, this year, are we going to be helping someone financially? Are we going to be giving to, you might call it, something like a charity? I did a couple of stints working for a charity called World Vision, but if I could talk about someone else for a second, there's a charity that is literally called Compassion. That is their name, if you Google them. And what I love about them is they work through the churches to partner with children. And so their tagline there is, I think, releasing people from poverty in Jesus' name. So what they're saying there is we're going to make sure that people realize this love and this charity is coming from a place of people who have received Jesus' compassion. We're giving it to others. I'm not affiliated with that group in any way, but it feels like such a gimme when we're talking about the idea of compassion to say, have you thought about doing something physical and tangible for people who have less than us? I feel like if people in this part of Sydney can't do that, then I don't know what part of the world can. And so that was the easy point to make, right? Anyone can stand up and say, let's give to charity. Can I make a harder point? And this will be the last one that I make. Matthew chapter 9. I want to try and change your mind about what compassion looks like in its fullest form. Matthew chapter 9. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in all their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. Notice there, the healing goes alongside the teaching. The two things go hand in hand. Now look at verse 36 with me. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. Why? Because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Now that to me feels like a non sequitur. Those things feel like we're starting different paragraphs, and yet in the Bible I'm reading, they're all slapped together. I take it that this is all one coherent thought unit. And what Jesus is doing, which is really going to push us and maybe leave us thinking differently from how we came in here, Jesus is asking us to connect the ideas of compassion and harvest. Compassion and harvest. When Jesus sees the world, he sees sheep without a shepherd. When Jesus sees the world, he sees a field of wheat
ready to be harvested. If it's not too crude, I think in his mind, he's talking about people like you and me, kind of like part of a field that he's brought into God's barn. The idea here is that when somebody meets God for the first time, when somebody comes home to him, when somebody is reconciled to the God who made them, it's like the wheat has been brought into the barn. And here's the thing. For many of us, compassion hasn't yet been linked up to harvest work. By the way, when I say harvest work, I'm not saying you should join a church staff team or go work for a full-time Christian organization. Harvest work is any work that any of us can do to help someone else come into relationship with the God of the universe. Harvest work is any work that you can do, any effort that you can do is probably a better word, to help somebody get to know Jesus more deeply. And here's the thing, if you really believe what this thing says, if you really think there is a heaven and also a hell, if you really think that the way people respond to the message of Jesus on the cross determines their relationship with the God of the universe, and you love the person, is there anything more compassionate than trying to help them come into relationship with the God who made them? Compassion leads to so many things. It's easy to say that it leads to charity because it's true and it does. Compassion also leads to harvest work if it's paired in your mind with deep conviction and faith. This is kind of allergic talk for us because we're so exposed to the idea of churches that want to grow because some pastor wants a better car. And you go, that's disgusting because that is not harvest connected to compassion. And yet, you cannot get away from the fact that Jesus was always talking about the fields. He was always talking about the lost sheep. He was always talking about the people who have not connected to God yet, but they might in the future, because the limiting factor, according to verse 37, is the number of workers, the number of people who are playing the game, the number of Christians who are moved by compassion to share the message of Jesus with the people they love and care deeply about. That's why verse 38 finishes the little section here, and Jesus' application of compassion is ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his field. Can I finish by saying that I'm a little bit nervous about saying, but I think it might be helpful. I'll try to say it as helpfully as possible. In this room right now, this will be one of our smaller weeks because it's January 5th, everyone's on holidays. In this room right now, it feels pretty good. There's enough people to make it a vibe when we sing. There's enough people that your kids in the kids program have other people roughly their age to get on with. It feels kind of good. You know, there's enough people in the room, but you're also not sardined together. And if you're given to barn thinking, then you say, let's just keep it this way. This is great. And it is great. I love it. And yet, Jesus was always thinking about the fields more than just the barns. There's something like 127,000 people just in Ku-ring-gai. If you add up this church, all the other churches in Ku-ring-gai, and how many people are actually showing up to them and attending them, it's a pretty small number. And it would just be a misstep for us to say, yeah, it's a pretty big church, I really like it. It might be better to be thinking, hey, I'm connected to the Lord of the harvest who's moved by compassion because he wants the best things for the people he knows, and he's even moved by compassion for the people he doesn't know yet. We can't give ourselves to barn thinking. We have to give ourselves to field thinking if we're going to align ourselves with Jesus the way that he does. So let me finish by recapping. Here we go. Jesus has compassion on us in our suffering. Jesus even has compassion on us when we're not expecting it. even in our moments of temptation and sin. A really straightforward way to show some compassion might actually be to do something for the poor as it is possible for you. And another less straightforward but equally true part of compassion is to recognize that harvest work, which all of us can do, is an expression of compassion. One of the best Sundays, one of my favorite Sundays, I should say, last year was Celebration Sunday. We got to baptize a whole bunch of people. I think we got a picture. If it's helpful, we can pull it up. It was so good to say these people have become Christians, and they might not have been Christians, let's say 5 years ago, maybe even 1 year ago. And when this kind of stuff happens, what you're seeing is the result of someone else's compassion, right? Firstly, you're seeing the result of Jesus' compassion for us, that he leaves heaven to come to earth to give his life so that we could be reconnected to the God who we've run away from. And in the same moment, you're seeing the result of a compassionate believer who has been bold enough to do the uncomfortable thing and share their faith with someone who's then accepted it and come to accept it. So good. When people get saved, God gets glory. They get a new eternity, and we get joy. Do you want to pray with me? God, I pray that as I've spoken right now, some of this might have been helpful. I pray for anything that's been unhelpfully expressed that you'd make it just fall to the side. But God, I pray that you'd help us to see the world your way. I pray that you would help us to genuinely believe the deep truths of the Bible. I pray that you'd help us to experience and receive your compassion. I pray that you'd help us to distribute it. And God, I pray that many, many people would come to know your compassion, who right now are sitting at home on a Sunday morning because they're just completely disconnected from you. Please make us bold. Please turn us into harvest workers. Amen.